Are this week's events in Bihar important? Do they mark a setback for the BJP? And could they have some consequence for the next general election? I think yes to all of them. Of course, they're important. An important state has changed hands. Of course, it's a setback for the BJP, which was proud of the fact that it ran governments in UP and Bihar, two of India's most populous states. And yes, if the RJD continues on this rise, and all the polls suggest it might, then there will be reverses for the BJP at the next general election. So yes, of course, these events are important for all of these reasons. Do they mark a triumph of secularism, a defeat of communalism? No, they're not. And though we're very jubilant and people are claiming that secularism has won, actually secularism has nothing to do with it. The claim about secularism rests on how you view Nitish Kumar. Currently, it's fashionable to view him as this very nice chap who got upset by what the BJP was doing to divide India and decided to chuck them overboard. I think Nitish might want you to believe that, but you'd be crazy to agree with him. First of all, this idea that Nitish Kumar woke up one day and said, "Oh my God, they're dividing India," is nonsense. Whatever he's complaining about has been going on for a long time, and I didn't see him waking up in a snit in those days. The reason Nitish Kumar has done what he has is because he believed the BJP was trying to divide his party, and to leave the BJP, therefore, for him, was a matter of survival, not a matter of principle. You should remember a bit about Nitish Kumar. I think people sometimes forget that he was an ally of the BJP's for a long time. It was only when Narendra Modi was on the ascendant that Nitish let it be known that he was not happy with Modi's ascendance. And there was all this talk of tension between Modi and Nitish. There was a platform at a public meeting where he was forced to shake hands with Modi, and he acted like this was a really big deal. And because of these alleged reservations about Narendra Modi, he aligned with Lalu Prasad Yadav and various people and created a grand alliance. This grand alliance defeated the BJP in the assembly elections, and everyone said, "Oh, victory of secularism again." But not quite, because Nitish values survival more than he values secularism. So when he had problems with the RJD, he forgot everything he'd said about Modi, he forgot everything he'd said about the BJP dividing India, quickly scurried back to the BJP and became their ally again. In fact, they even fought an election together, and they fought it at a time when the issue of India being divided, of communal passions being on the rise, was very much on the agenda. At that stage, it didn't bother Nitish. So what we're seeing here is not some secular revival or some rediscovery of secularism by Nitish Kumar. What we're seeing is an incredibly shrewd and incredibly cynical politician planning how to survive and planning the next step in his journey. Nitish Kumar has now changed sides so often that I sometimes think that he wakes up in the morning, closes his eyes and says to himself, "Hey, which side am I on today?" That's the kind of politics he's been following. So yes, if you want to see this as a setback for the BJP, of course it's a setback. If you want to see this as the victory of secularism, well, dream away. Secularism has nothing to do with it. Survival is what this is about. The second thing I think we need to remember about Bihar is it's a setback for the BJP in another way. It shows us the extent to which people are reluctant to align with the BJP. Why is that? Well, again, a little history. People forget sometimes that the BJP used to be regarded as the sort of third rail of politics, as a sort of untouchable. You could never align with the BJP. In 1996, when Atal Bihari Vajpayee was made Prime Minister, he formed a 13-day government, but ultimately he had to resign because nobody would align with him. Vajpayee was conscious of this. He had always believed, he said, that the BJP would not come to power during his lifetime. In fact, when the president gave him the note asking him to be sworn in, there were tears in his eyes because he believed that this day would never come. So that was the BJP's attitude, and worked very hard to overcome that obstacle. It had people like Pramod Mahajan, who cultivated allies, tried very hard to say the BJP was not so bad, maybe you can all align with the BJP. And finally that worked, and from 1999 onwards, the BJP was able to form a government, and it did it on the basis of a coalition. But even then, allies treated the BJP with a certain amount of disdain or distance perhaps. For instance, that Vajpayee government was brought down by Jayalalitha and the Anna DMK, and once again the flag of secularism was raised and people said, oh, how can we align with the unsecular communal BJP? As it turned out, Vajpayee then went on to win election and served a full term. But he never quite forgot that lesson. And so the BJP always bent over backwards to listen to its allies, to try its best to make its allies happy. That was Vajpayee's BJP. This is a very different BJP. It has many advantages that Vajpayee didn't have. One of them is that it has won two electoral landslides in a row. Vajpayee was never even able to get a parliamentary majority. The other is that Narendra Modi is, by a long, long way, the most popular politician in India. So that makes the BJP not just confident, it makes it also a little complacent and perhaps a little arrogant. It's begun to believe that it is the natural party of governance, that India can only be ruled by the BJP. If other people want to align with the BJP, well, they're welcome to. But ultimately, it'll always be a BJP-led government and you can be junior partners to us. It's a view that worked initially, but bit by bit, I think more and more allies are leaving the BJP. They feel that to align with the BJP, a party that is so much in love with itself, is to risk some kind of damage to their own parties. And the BJP is conscious of this, and I think wants to make it clear that unless you align with the BJP, you're in trouble. Let's not forget what Amit Shah talked about. When they came to power, he said he wanted a Congress Mukt Bharat. Well, he's got a Congress Mukt Bharat. The Congress is obligingly laid down and sort of given up on nearly everything. It has done very badly in parliamentary elections and it loses state after state. So having put the Congress where it wants it, Mr. Shah and Mr. Modi are now going for the other parties. Who can forget the experience of Maharashtra? In Maharashtra, when the BJP Shiv Sena alliance won the election, Uddhav Thackeray said, can we rotate the chief ministership? You become chief minister for a while and we become chief minister for a while. It was not an unreasonable arrangement, given that the last time the Shiv Sena had actually been in power in the 1990s, the Shiv Sena had the chief ministership. But Amit Shah and Mr. Modi rejected this. They said, no, the chief ministership is the BJP's. You have to play second fiddle to us. Well, as we know, Uddhav didn't believe that. He went off and forged another alliance with the Sharad Pawar Congress and with the Sonia Gandhi Congress. That alliance lasted longer, I think, than the BJP thought it would. And the BJP resolved to punish him for his defiance. Bit by bit, using threats, using blandishments, it stole away his MLAs to the extent that Uddhav was left with hardly anyone in the assembly, and the Shiv Sena rebels all said they were supporting the BJP and wanted to align with the BJP. Once that happened, once Uddhav Thackeray had lost power, the BJP now, logically, should have got the chief ministership because that is what the whole dispute was about to begin with. But no, it said Eknath Shinde, who's a Shiv Sena rebel, will be the chief minister. Why would they do that? Well, they did that because they wanted to finish Uddhav further. They hope that Eknath Shinde's Shiv Sena will become the official Shiv Sena. That now that he's in power, all the other Shiv Senics will leave the Thackerays and come over to this faction. So that is the depth of the BJP's punishment. The depth of its desire to punish anyone in any party who does not go along. Either you're a junior partner or you're in trouble. I think something like that was beginning to happen with Nitish Kumar. He has claimed, perhaps with some justification, that the BJP was trying to split his party. And certainly if you listen to guys in the BJP talk, particularly now, they say things like, oh, he was always the junior partner. He was frankly a burden on us. We never wanted him. The idea was to take his MLAs, make them join the BJP, and sort of airbrush him or edit him out of the picture. That is why Nitish reacted the way he did and went back to his old enemies, his old rivals, and broke the alliance with the BJP. The Shiv Sena, Nitish, there are more. You can go through the history of the BJP's alliances. There's nearly always a problem of some kind. political parties have realized that for Mr. Modi and for Mr. Shah, it's not enough to be in power. They should be the only ones to have any power. They see themselves as being absolute. They don't just want a Congress Mukt Bharat. They want a politics Mukt Bharat. They want a happy kingdom where they rule without any political parties or alliances or anyone like that. This is not an ideal situation, of course, in a democracy. And that is why I think there are so many problems, so many reservations among other parties about tying up with the BJP. Will the BJP realize this? Will they learn any lessons from this? People say they will. I think they won't. Which leads us to the third point. It ain't over till it's over. And it certainly isn't over yet. The BJP is not going to let this go. It waited 2.5 years to punish Uddhav Thackeray. It is not going to let Nitish Kumar go unpunished. What they will do, and we've seen this playbook played out in every state. I mean, they're still in the process of punishing Mamata Banerjee for that electoral defeat she inflicted on them. What they will do is, with 1,000 cuts, try and damage Nitish Kumar's party, try and damage the new alliance. They will unleash the agencies. They will look for evidence of corruption. And let's not be too pussyfooting about this. The truth is, they will find corruption because there is corruption in Bihar, and it's not so difficult to find it. So expect now some kind of retribution from the BJP. Expect some kind of punishment. Expect a very, very tough ride for the new government. Central funds will probably be denied. There will be issues about meeting with the Prime Minister. There will be raids. There will be cases. There will be investigations. So it's not going to go easy. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with the view that the BJP can no longer take everyone for granted because many other political parties now resent what the BJP is doing. Allies are unhappy and others will be unwilling to ally. Does it have any impact on secularism? Is it a secularist triumph, as people are saying? Only if you take the line that anything that defeats the BJP is a triumph for secularism. If you take a more honest view, no, secularism has nothing to do with this. But what you have now is a party that's immensely popular, a party that believes it can win every election, riding forward and finding obstacles in its course. It found an obstacle in Bengal. It's now found an obstacle in Bihar. I think as of now, if a parliamentary election was held tomorrow, Mr. Modi would still win handily. But the fact that there are some signs of resistance, and though those signs are coming from within his allies, tells you he'll still win, but it ain't going to be that easy.